and then beg them to go in flip-flops. Go in any other shoe but their running shoe. Because it wouldn't be prejudiced by that. They would go, well, he doesn't know what he's talking about. He's in a motion control shoe, so we'll put him in one again.
You're listening to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast. And this is Trail Talk, where we have casual conversations with all kinds of runners. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. Whenever trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where our conversations might go. So there aren't too many topics that are off limits for us. So if you're ready, let's get started. Hello, welcome back to another episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Trail Talk. My guest this week is Christina Curdy. Christina is a physical therapist. She does comprehensive gait analysis for the military and private clients. She's a wound care specialist. If you have an injury, you want someone like her to be in the aid station when you come in. We talk about all kinds of things from feet, shoes, exploring the Himalayas, and finding mushrooms. For people who don't know you, I would like to know a little bit more about your history. Tell me a bit about yourself and how was it you got into running? When did you start running as a runner?
Well, I'm a therapist in physical therapy, mm-hmm. and the world of foot injuries, wound care was a big deal to me, right?
Okay. And that was what you were doing as a professional.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Okay. Oh yeah. Yeah. But then when I moved up here in Washington, it's a sort of a tangent, but it goes right to your question. I got called up. I was handpicked by somebody to open up a clinic of biomechanics, gait analysis for the Army.
Okay.
And it was a baby thing in progress, and I molded into this huge, sought-after clinic on post, mm-hmm. in Tacoma in Washington. And I decided that if I am going to make these soldiers do what I'm telling them to do, I figured I better start doing it.
Okay.
I had done small stuff, you know, like little mini triathlons and stuff in Florida. Mm-hmm. But I always got some heat, and it just sort of waned off. So when I came into Washington, I started doing this clinic on JBLM. I figured I needed to do walk the walk. Mm-hmm. If I'm asking mm-hmm. them to do it, I'm going to do it. So I started doing it, and it just kind of blossomed from there.
Okay. So what I mean, you said gait analysis, is another way to say it, like running form analysis? Is that?
It is comprehensive gait analysis. I had three cameras. I had a huge TV screen, the Woodway treadmill. It was computerized. So I could see your angulations, and I did all this body work on people before they got onto the treadmill, and then I would film them.
Okay.
And they could see how well they were improving, even on land strike. It was amazing. It was real time gait analysis. Mm-hmm. It would take up to 2 hours. Then I'd work out with them after that or whatever.
Oh wow!
I loved it.
Okay.
I loved it.
So I guess my first thought is, were you able to do the same thing for yourself? I mean, a lot of times it's easier to look at somebody else and say, oh, here's how to correct this. I mean, were you able to do this,
absolutely,
use the same tools?
Absolutely. Okay. And my problem is I knew that every time I was working on the patients or on the soldiers or my clients, however you want to call it, I was always favoring one side.
Okay.
And you know, we all favor a side.
Uh-huh.
And then I started becoming lopsided with how I was building myself up, because it was so much easier to do it on my favorite side, because mm-hmm. I did it so well on my favorite side. I had to be failing practicing on the opposite, on my left.
Okay.
So I recognize it. Yeah, I was working on myself as well, as long as I was working out with all of these guys and girls.
Yeah. So I guess what were some of the things that you found were that people were doing needed to be corrected? Not necessarily doing wrong, but what?
Okay, most common stuff, classically common deficits are poorly controlled pelvis, weak glutes. The glutes don't ever fire. So they're always asking their hamstrings to overwork. That's where you get the hamstring strain.
Okay.
You're not getting an extension of the hip, so your glutes don't want to work. Not so much quad stuff, but really weak abdominals, and then everything else you could see, you know, bent, the neck would be bent backwards, it would be up high on one side, their hips would drop. The classic stuff was just glute weakness, poor abdominal strengthening, upper back issues, weakness.
So when the
bad fitting shoes.
Oh,
yeah. Yes.
So, okay, since you mentioned shoes, I'll have to ask this. What do you have to look for? What do you look for in a shoe? Most people say, and I read on Facebook, you know, someone will ask about shoes and they say, go to a running store and get yourself fitted. And I'm like, okay, I've been to the running stores. I didn't have that good of luck with being fitted with the right shoe.
Yeah, I don't. My first thing, so the commonality issues were they were too short for their foot, narrow. And if you're going into my deal was if you're going to go into a running store, and I do say that lightly, typically, don't ever go in the shoe that you are used to running in. These guys target that visually, and they go, you know what? I think she's going to want this shoe, or I think he's going to want that shoe, because look at what he's coming in.
Okay.
And so they don't even work to look at the person and how they move. And then they'll do their gait analysis. Looking from pretty much maybe the shin down to the foot. And I'm a whole body girl. It is just going to go right up the chain, whatever happens when you land your foot on the ground. So they kind of miss a few marks when they're giving them shoes. If you walk in with a motion control shoe, which almost hardly exists much anymore, you're probably going to walk out with a motion control shoe. They did it to my clients all the time out of the Army. And I beg them to go in flip-flops. Go in any other shoe but their running shoe, because it wouldn't be prejudiced by that. They would go, well, he doesn't know what he's talking about. He's in a motion control shoe, so we'll put him in one again.
Right.
So it's people wear too narrow of a shoe, too short of a shoe. I was absolutely one of them. My toes were totally up into the inseam of the shoe. You can't do that. Because you need to slip forward. You're going to piston forward, whether you like it or not, in shoe. So you need that range of motion.
So that's where black toenails come from, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I bet you. Absolutely. They're too short. I've been in this size for 9 years. Yeah, the older you get, the longer and wider your foot becomes.
Yes, I found that out. I found that because I wore size 12 for like forever, and I kept complaining about my feet, you know, my shoes would hurt, and my wife finally says, why don't you have somebody measure your foot? And I was like, I measured my foot, and they say, well, you need a size 13. I'm like, no wonder my feet have not been. That was before I was running. It was just.
Oh God! So are you a 14 yet?
No. Well, I don't know. I haven't had shoes on for probably 4 months. I mean, I'm really interested because I did the Punk and Holler 100, and which was it's on gravel roads, and I was wearing Hokas, and they were kind of, you know, I'd switched from Ultras to Hokas, and so
Ooh, much.
Yeah, and so they were a little bit snug, you know, around the sides, but my feet swelled and I didn't get my laces loosened in time, and so I irritated the top of my foot, and it almost took me out of the race. It was just like I had this pain from, like, felt like somebody stuck a knife in the top of my foot and dragged it up my shin. So I was able to walk, but it was painful. And it got better. I mean, the pain when I got it loosened up, but it was like that was the thing that I went, okay, I've been reading about barefoot running, I'm going to give that a try. And so first of the year, I got 4mm sandals and have been doing been doing the barefoot thing. So, what's that?
What do you think? Do you like them?
I like it. I like it. In fact, running on pavement, I'm going full barefoot, and I actually feel less impact on my body than I was when I was running in shoes last year. So, yeah, I just it for me it works. I mean, I know there's a lot of people who have had varying results, but I feel good. I mean, it took a while strengthening my feet, Yeah.
But do you know why you changed the impact load on how you landed?
Oh no! From barefoot? I know exactly how I changed, and I could feel it. Yeah,
you can, because your body is always working to protect you,
mm-hmm.
and your body senses that there isn't that thickness of protection that lands underneath your heel, so you. You're not afraid of hitting a rock under your heel.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now you are, because you know you're in a thin line of a shoe or a sandal. So you will strike midfoot to full foot or to forefoot.
Mm-hmm.
Your brain intuitively knows not to land on the heel. At some point, the more you get used to it, I'll bet you if somebody watches you, when you're tired, you start landing on your heel. You might be a little softer, but you may start landing, because that's what's happened in some of the studies I had.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a four-foot runner. Oh, sure. Yeah. Okay, let's take a look. You are, and then boom, they get tired. They start landing on their heels.
Yeah, and I did that kind of midway through. I realized I was running on sidewalk. I thought my heel was still coming down. It was coming down soft, but yeah. It was coming down first. And it was not, and so I saw that. Well, actually, what I did is I was filming myself running through water sprinklers, and I looked and I went, wait a minute, my heel's coming down just a mm-hmm. nanosecond before, and so mm-hmm. What I did is adjusted my stride, brought my feet back under my body a little bit more, it's been, see, I was doing the chi running technique. Before I switched to barefoot, so I was a heel striker. When I ran in my 20s, I was a heel striker, and had all kinds of injuries, shin splints, you know, knees and sore knees, and I mean it was like all of the stuff. And I was running in cheap shoes. I mean that was back in the late 70s. So, so I started running again at 60 on trails, and found out about chi running, and that's enabled me to run a lot farther. But I was still cheating. Mm-hmm. I was still landing a little bit on my heel because I was wearing shoes.
Yeah. A little bit. But for trail running, you know, your body is going to naturally change that and how you run, because it's on even trail.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to slow down. You're going to be more mindful of where you step. So there's a genteelness of how people run on the trail versus the mindlessness of running on road.
Yes. Yeah.
That's why trail is so important to me. I love trail. I hate road. Because
mm-hmm.
I think too much. How much farther? Oh, my God. Where am I going? Oh, I'm hot. I'm bored. Well, what am I going to do tomorrow?
Yeah.
Versus a being present in the moment on the trail, you have to know where you are. You have to see just the step in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
You might get to a little bit, but not a whole lot, and you're just in the moment, and you're quiet. My mind is so quiet there that I'm super grateful for that.
Yes, and I love trail running for that. But, So tell me a little bit about we took this kind of turn about gait analysis and shoes, but tell me about your trail running experience. You know, you said you like to run trails. I know you've done some extensive trail running.
Absolutely love them. I love trails. I love everywhere about it. I've done most of my trails. Pretty much only in Washington since I moved here.
Okay.
I think trying to think if I've run anywhere. Oh, Moab. I helped with Moab. I helped with Tahoe. So there was that, but I'm more of a trail running in Washington. No, I just love it. The hills still bother me, just in terms of heading up, going uphill. Like, that's always been the bane of my existence. Okay. I haven't traveled. Am I lying. Holy cow. I did the Bhutan International Race. I was in Bhutan.
Bhutan. That is... That's like a closed country.
We were invited as a group for Tacoma Runners Group.
Uh-huh.
And we were invited in, and it was quite a bit to get there to get inside. But it was a half marathon and marathon trail race.
Wow.
And we weren't the only Americans there, but I think we're the only group of Americans there.
Wow.
And it was a couple years ago.
That is amazing. So how did if you were invited as a group, how did the other people get there? I mean, it's like, because Bhutan is from what I've heard is, you know, you've got to have permission from the government to enter.
Yeah, you have to be invited.
Yes. So was like somebody in Bhutan decided that they were going to let's sponsor a trail race and invite these foreigners to come run.
We've always had an international trail race.
Oh, really? Okay.
Bhutanese, they've started, I can't remember, years and years ago, but then it became an international half marathon and marathon. And somehow the Tacoma Runners was invited to this.
Wow.
And it was phenomenal. I mean, there was a huge long, part of it was a huge long suspension bridge. You have to run over a river to get to the other side. It was amazing. But I think I think 12 of us went.
Wow.
And we all ran it. It was marvelous. Actually, one of our girls took fifth in the women's side.
Wow.
Which was amazing because it was mostly Bhutanese and it was mostly a lot of military.
Okay.
Because they every day, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And sure had the cardiac. We went there and decided to traverse Tiger's Nest Monastery the day before.
Okay.
We could acclimate.
What is the altitude I'd imagine, because it's like part of it's like near the Himalayas.
I think the race itself was, I think, 6,000 to 8,000. Don't mark my words, but I'm pretty sure it's 6,000 to 8,000.
Okay.
So, and none of us were really, we don't live here in Tacoma. We're not 6,000 feet by any chance.
Right.
So we had to do that. So we acclimated to and decided to hike to the Tiger's Nest Monastery, which was, we started at 8,000 and we ended at 12,000 plus.
Okay.
Up there. We came back, and then the following day or so, we ran the race. And then the day after that, we drove over to the Ha Valley in the Himalayas and hiked the Himalayas for a while.
Wow. that sounds like a fun trip.
It was, but it was extremely difficult. I mean, we were up, I think my highest, I think it was 14, 15,000 feet, and I got altitude sickness. It was, oh my God, well below zero, and we only packed to 20 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
So I had all my clothes on. It was, for me, I don't handle the freeze that well.
Mm-hmm.
I came back early. I could not. I was sick. Well, I couldn't do it.
I don't know. Would you imagine there's probably wind? I mean,
the wind was, I think, about 30 to 40 miles an hour, if not faster, because the Sherpas were up all night hammering our tents down. Literally, that's all you heard besides the wind. We lost our bathrooms.
Oh, we lost
our kitchen tents. And the other Sherpas were sleeping in the supply tent so it would stay down. All the animals we were using to trek our stuff up, they took off. So we had to kind of wait a little bit for them to come back.
So
it was fun.
Did they come back on their own? Did somebody have to go like?
Yeah, some of them came back on their own. They had to get the rest, I think.
Huh.
It was just, but we were high enough that we saw the blue dull sheep.
Wow.
We saw the blue sheep. That was cool.
That's cool.
That was cool. So yeah, I've actually trail raced outside of Washington.
Wow.
In the
United
States. That's
a cool story. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would love to go run internationally. I mean, I see some of the races that are in these exotic places. I'm like, oh, that looks like so much fun. And
I would love to. We were going to go to Romania in June for, there was a sky race, and it was a 10-mile half marathon or a full marathon, and it went over the ridges of the mountains to come down.
Oh wow!
And sign me up. I wanted to go to Romania.
Is that one of those trails where you've got a cliff on each side? And mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen some pictures of people running those ridges.
Now you can look it up. It's called, I believe it's called the Sky Race.
Huh.
And this was held in Romania. And I know the beginning part of it, you had to use ropes to climb up and boulder over to get up there.
Okay. Wow.
It's a thought.
Yeah, it's a thought. That's cool. So have you done any of the long ultra races on trails?
The only one I really liked was still in Washington. Was Point Defiance 50K.
Okay.
And it's a loop. It's a 10-mile loop all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
Do it three times.
Right.
You know the 15, the 30, and then the 50K is what you can do. I've never done anything longer ever.
Okay. Okay. But you've helped with some long races. I mean, you were. And that was the thing. One of the things I thought fascinating is the advice that you'd given to runners running on the 200 mile races, and some of the things that
don't shave your balls.
So
some people swear by it, but oh my God, I saw the devastation when you do.
Yeah. So why is it? I mean, you'd think that not having hair, you know, not having the hair to chafe would eliminate chafing. So
absolutely.
What happens?
The hair growth, that little tiny stubble, you know what happens? You know how you get stubble on your face within, mm-hmm. what, 10 hours? That happens down yonder too.
Okay.
And then you've got days of this, and the rubbing and the chafing and the sweating and the bacteria, it creates a perfect fungal mess.
Mm-hmm.
And you're bleeding from here to there, and you're one big open chafed sore everywhere. So we all decided that if you don't have to shave, go, don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Now the other way, if you wax out, then truly the hair follicle, the brand new hair is coming out as if it's soft fuzz.
Okay.
But when you cut it off, when you shave it off, it's a point.
So would that apply to women shaving their arms as well?
Yeah, we had quite a few people with chafing. Absolutely. Huh. Absolutely.
Huh.
But their bodies are more used to shaving because we typically do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think these guys that had the problems had never shaved before, but they thought it was a great idea. And they would stand there with their legs wide spread and just trying to fan anything they could fan off. I felt terrible for them. They begged me. They were so painful. I had to drop down there and investigate the scenario. It was horrible. That underwear called, what is it? Some balls. It separates the thighs from your testicles and your penis.
Okay.
I think it's called sacs. I think it's called sacs.
The underwear's called sacs?
Huh. And they're $40 a piece, and they're golden. It's worth it.
Really? Okay.
I got a buddy that had an extra pair, and he looked at that poor suffering soul, and I looked at him with big puppy dog eyes and said, would you please give them to him? And he did. He relented. He gave it to him. He was in heaven. Life was so much better.
Huh. So even with the chafing, he was able to continue to...
Absolutely.
Huh.
By God, you know, when the medics are there, everybody's afraid of telling the medics anything.
Well, yeah, we lie. I mean, we come into the aid station, we lie.
But here's the deal for 95% of us, we're not here to pull you out. We're here to support, to get you, to keep you going to finish. Our goal is to get you to finish.
Mm-hmm.
This guy was terrified I was going to pull him out. And I did everything under the sun I could, even wrapped his manhood.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I wrapped it for him to try and get him to keep going. Because I knew it was that important to him.
Yeah, yeah.
So we don't want to pull y'all out. We want to keep y'all in. Because if you're successful, if I'm successful keeping you successful, then you and other people want to enter that race again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sadly, that's the moneymaker for the race directors.
Right, yeah. If you have people who have problems and issues, they won't come back. Mm-hmm.
No. And other people go, if he can't do it, I won't do it. Yeah, this is like, the foot, the swelling of the feet with the shoe sizes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm someone that says, let's up the shoe size because you've got tape and sock and swelling. And now you're trying to get into your original shoe, and it's going to be incredibly difficult to do that. So let's go up one.
Mm-hmm.
There's clever ways of lacing. Don't let anybody forget there's clever ways, even for you, Eric, with the top of your foot pain.
Mm-hmm.
There's a way to lace that you can avoid that area if you get that kind of pain happening.
Yeah.
You can stay box that lace.
Yeah, and I had already done that. It just was still too tight. So I skipped the midfoot lacing. It wasn't laced across there, but it's just it was the top lace, the one that at the very top that.
Oh, right at the ranunculus. Yeah, right at the ankle, kind of the ankle joint.
Area. I'm sure that's the one that did it because, but
you use two very different shoes for that race.
Yeah,
Hokas that were super thick and rocky, mm-hmm. I haven't seen a Hoka that I like for a stable ankle.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a stable ankle, the Hokas like to rock in and out.
Okay.
Depending on the thickness of them.
Mm-hmm.
The lower ones are cool, but the super thick ones, you just sort of rock off your forefoot.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of a weak ankle, it's kind of not the greatest choice of shoe.
And
the options are awesome.
Yeah, the reason I ended up in Hokas was a long story. So, Ultras was the shoe that I preferred, but it was they wore out, and it was a small running store, and they weren't able to get any more, and like. My wife was like, "No, you're not buying another pair. You're not gonna buy another pair of shoes," and so I was kind of forced in, and I went through a couple of different brands that didn't work, and the Hokas were the closest. So that's how I ended up. And so, but yeah, yeah. no, they. Yeah.
But I'm square toe.
But I'm good. I'm good in my running sandals now. So that's my. I am feeling really good in those.
I think that's great.
Yeah. And I did almost a 50K for my birthday a couple of weeks ago, and did well with the sandals. But you know, again, you talk about chafing. It was so humid. I was going to try to do 63K, but I ended up with just 50. But it was so humid that I experienced chafing that I didn't expect, because my clothes were soaked. I mean, I couldn't, if I would have been in the water, I couldn't have been any more wet. And it was like the last several miles, I was like, you know, and I didn't shave, but it was like there was places rubbing that
were. Yeah, there's walnut butter, there's run goo, you gotta just slap up in there.
And I did that at the beginning of the day, but by the time I was at my 25 miles, it's like, you know, that stuff was gone. So, and I actually did. I had a little bit I carried with me, and so I did lube up a little, you know, apply a little bit more, but it was already, you know, it was already a little bit of a pain there that, you know, hadn't. It's like I should have done it preventatively, but you know, once you feel the pain, it's a little bit late to.
Oh, too late. Yep. Yeah.
To try to do that.
It's awful.
So. Totally. So you, speaking of feet, I mean, I know you've done a lot with blisters. Is there any advice you can give about how to prevent blisters in long races from your feet swelling? What's the best?
Yeah, there's a couple of guys that I've known in the 200s that have almost never had issues with their feet. And what do they do? These guys, pretty much Cesar, would wash his feet, dry them, powder them instead of goo them,
mm-hmm.
in gingy socks,
mm-hmm.
the toes separate, and then would go straight on. Other people would goo everything and wear a regular sock and then keep switching socks. Depends upon what you're doing with these long races. How, you know, are you changing your socks? Are you changing your shoes? Are you washing your feet? Because even that fine dust will cut into you.
Mm-hmm.
If you get
so
hot
is that, spots. Is that what does it?
There's a lot of that dust will do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine and irritating. And then sometimes I think some of the better results I did see was in gingies.
Okay.
Or a toed sock.
Or a what? A toed sock?
A toed sock. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we don't want to use, you know, brand names out there, but and gingies are great.
Yeah, Exoskin, I think, makes a toed sock as well. I don't know of any other brands.
I haven't tried them yet.
Yeah, so the people who have tried them, you know, a lot of people swear by that brand. It's just, you know, but I don't
know. I'll give it another shot. I'll give that a shot as well. But the blistering, you've got to know the hot spot. If I've seen these guys' feet where they have the blisters in between these toes, or in here, in between, mm-hmm. right where the tip of the foot meet. So that you got to figure out, does that mean the shoe is too tight around mm-hmm. the forefoot and then squeezing, and then you're getting that pinching rub? That's going to cause a blister. It's going to cause a whole lot of problems. I have pictures of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got to allow yourself the birth of your toes. You've got to let them be able to move. Protect them. Some people preemptively tape. I'm not a super fan of that, because then you're already getting adhesive on areas that, if it starts to break down, how am I going to help you get it off,
right.
and not tear the skin off? Because that's happened too.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen monster things. And I would definitely have everybody run their fingers, their bare hands, inside their shoe and feel anything that's rough, pokey, sticky, anything. I had a glorious guy that did not do that to his shoe. we discovered about, oh God, where was I? I think he was 110 miles into the race at the, where was I? At the Moab race. It was Moab. We were freezing. Brutal. He said, the tops of my toes are being cut and I don't know what's going on. I think I got a DNF. I said, well, wait a minute, let's take a look. Because you know I got to investigate. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, I'm not sleuth. I took a look and I felt barehanded inside. And it turns out that, fascinatingly, I won't say what brand name it was, but it used part of its their tongue mm-hmm. design was plastic.
Okay.
At the base towards the toes. That plastic was either bent, either because it accidentally bent or he put his foot in there, bent it. I don't know what happened, but it was bent and then now cutting into the tops of his toes.
It's like having a knife across the top of your foot.
Both feet were like this.
Oh, wow.
I've got pictures of it. And I looked, I said, dude, have you felt this? This is what's going on. How come nobody figured this out? So we actually butchered his shoes. We took and cut through the first ray or your big toe where that tongue is inside the shoe. Mm-hmm. We cut that open and cut it away and it completely eliminated that knife that was just digging into, you know, the knuckles of your toes.
Mm-hmm.
And he was able to finish the race, but he wrote that company.
Yeah.
You need to change that design because that's a no bueno. So you just feel the inside of that shoe. Feel for anything. If your fingertip feels something, by golly, your foot might, but your tissue of your foot will feel it and mm-hmm. react to protect it.
Yeah, and I'm amazed. If you run your hands inside of running shoes, there's a lot of rough spots inside, a lot of them.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
Which is why are so important as well, but you really got to know what it feels like in there because there's diabetic people out there that run these races. Scary as things.
Yeah.
And they come in well.
Yeah, that would be even more important because they have mm-hmm. less feeling in,
uh-huh.
in, you know, in hard that,
to so. Hear them all sorts.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Wow. So keeping your feet clean, that's interesting. And just as regular maintenance, washing your shoes, is that an important thing?
So when you say wash, let's validate in that statement. Are you putting it in a washing machine and then air drying it, or are you putting it in a washing machine and then a dryer?
We've had a chance here in Kansas the last two seasons to run in a lot of mud.
Okay.
And so the I've seen some discussions of other people, you know, of the Facebook groups online, you know, what do we do with the mud? And you know, there some people say, well, I just let it dry and I put my feet in it and then run the next time. You know, and then they never wash their shoes. I've got a utility sink in my garage, and so I tend to, well, I think my Altra is, because I wasn't washing them after runs, I think that's what helped, that's what sped up the fabric breaking down on the sides because of all the silica, you know, that was dried and left in there. And so I thought, okay, you know, now when I come home, if they're muddy, I'm going to rinse them off, try to get that silica out of the fabric. So that was my thought.
I'm all for it. Warm, soapy soak is fine. If what I've learned through shoe companies, their designs might be a little different now, but primarily, if you throw it in a washing machine, depending upon the temperature and the agitation of it, it's not all that great because it could twist or bother. We let it twist under our body weight, our feet, mm-hmm. particularly shoes. But if you just soak it in, you know, gentle, foamy water, soapy water, and then go back and forth in it, fine. Don't ever, don't ever put it in the hot air dryer.
Yeah.
That would denature the shoe in a heartbeat. You're ruining, you're cooking the sole. That either blown rubber or the whatever they do to their base, you're going to cook it and make it harder. And you didn't buy it because you wanted the hard sole.
Right.
Like, you want hogs if you're into that.
Yeah, yeah.
It really denatures the shoe.
Okay.
I see mine, I've washed mine, but in buckets of water and the old timey stuff.
Uh-huh.
I don't rub it or anything, but then I'll take a strong hose and I'll try and blow out as much dirt as I can, and then I'll air dry it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm even worried about putting my shoes over a hot air. During the wintertime, you have the hot air, the vents coming up for your I feel like that might be slightly cooking the sole as well. So I take it away from that. I don't know if it's going to do any permanent harm or not to those.
I heard somebody, I don't remember where it was, that they said they would take their damp shoe, they'd wash their shoes off, and the refrigerator has exhaust come out at the bottom, and they would set it in front of the refrigerator overnight. And whoever they were talking to says, well, my refrigerator vents at the top. And he says, well,
I just don't know about hot air coming out, like the really hot air if you're heating your house. Mm-hmm. How is that going to deal with your shoe? Because I use the same trail shoe for winter and for spring and for summer.
Uh-huh.
They're expensive enough as it is. I don't want to ruin the shoe.
Yeah,
I do what I do, but not hot air on it.
Yeah, and I've set mine in front of a fan. I mean, I've got a fan in the garage, so I'll leave it overnight with the fan blowing on it, and they dry out.
Yep,
they dry out just fine. But
it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Well, and so, but what I guess my original question was: well, that if you don't do something like that, would that tend to? That I would think that might tend to add to blisters on your feet if you allow that just kind of
100%. You've got buildup and caking involved, and that stuff, if you feel it with your fingers, it's sharp. Mm-hmm. It can absolutely have. It can be a reason why you have a problem with your feet.
Mm-hmm. So how about races that have water crossings, So
drop bags.
Drop bags. Okay. So you'll keep basically put your sock. Put at least change your socks. Is that or try to change shoes too?
Well, people try to change shoes. It's whatever. It depends upon between each aid station. But wet feet, that the tissue is macerates. And it's way easier to pull the tissue, to tear the tissue, to blister it. There's all sorts of tissue issues that can happen when it's wet.
You talked about hot spots. One of the things that I had happen to me is a blister on the pad, the sole of my foot, about just not the ball of my foot, but right in the middle of the foot, right in the pad, the front part of my foot, and it blistered like through like the thick skin. It was way up inside. So I've kind of assumed that was either something that I was, again, you were talking about favoring one side stronger, that I was pushing off, or I was doing something to irritate that center part of my foot. I've talked to other people who've had the same kind of issue.
Is it around the second, third, fourth toes? Around that?
Yeah,
pad?
Like the second or third toe. Yeah.
And
so is that
means sometimes it can be, if it doesn't always happen, it could be a biomechanic issue. There can be something going on with your first ray or the way the shoe fits you. And sometimes you can get out of it. It sounds like if you have a blistering here and not over your first ray, your big toe and that big long. That's your PowerPoint right there.
And if
you blister in there, that's the first thing that's having to do the work for you. You're asking it to, forgive me for using the word, supinate, or you're kind of rolling out away from your big toe and pushing on that tissue and creating too much friction here, whereas you should be. It could be the camber of the trail that you were on. It could be all sorts of things. There's a lot of reasons why that can happen, but if it happens on flat ground and you still get it, I would look at the range of motion of your first array or your big toe.
Okay. Bye. I noticed it. What's that?
Sorry. Was that the first time you had that?
That was actually my first 50K run that I had that. And it took about 20 miles. So it was 3 10-mile loops. And at about 19 miles, it felt like I had a rock in my shoe.
Yep.
And
yep.
I kept going, and it was, you know, I just dealt with it. It was not something I could really do anything about, because it was, putting something over it. I mean, it was like on the bottom of my foot, right at the pad, you know, on the pad of my foot. You know, if it was a hand, you know, it was like right
exactly
in that part.
Very common. I've dealt with that a lot.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And it happened to me. It happened to me several times, and then I noticed it also wearing my sandals. So
that makes me think your first ray isn't fully functioning.
Okay.
Makes me feel like this guy, your big toe, doesn't want to be the first to land. That's its job. Its job is to be on the ground. Its job is to feel the ground, first ray, fifth ray, or pinky toe in your heel.
Mm-hmm.
And if this bad boy isn't meeting up, these guys are taking the job over for you.
Okay.
And these guys are getting, you know, this is fluff. Kind of think God put this stuff here so you could have painted toenails.
The big toe is where the action is.
It's your push off. It's absolutely your balance. It's everything.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not using that, there's something else going on. So something else has to take its job over.
Okay.
Your toes in that outside part of your pad, away from your first, your second, third, fourth pads, have to take the job of the first ray, because your first ray said, I'm on vacation. I'm going. I don't want to work. You guys do it. And so I wonder about your range of motion in your ankle and the range of motion of your first ray. Because there's something pushing you away from that. That makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah. I've noticed that the more that I run barefoot, the more that I'm rolling from the outside of my foot to the inside.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm coming, you know, so I'm actually rolling off my first toe as I push off.
True. Do you have a callus there?
What's that? I've got
a
callus.
Do you have a callus?
I've got it's flat on the bottom. Because I've been running barefoot on concrete, so okay. I can feel it. I can feel the way that it rolls off. So.
Okay.
So yeah. That's for me. I've run more road this year than I did last year. Just for the form, and it was, you know, and that's really the only reason is because I can if I'm running full barefoot and on the concrete, I can feel what's happening on my feet, and and exactly what my feet are doing, and so it's right. it's helped.
I bet immensely, but it, to translate on a trail is so different.
It is.
Right?
Well,
because you get more stability, more requirement of motion on trail than you do on road.
Right. Yeah. It's translated over to trail a little bit.
And, good. I'm glad.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. But I think, you know, I was running in the heat and I was wet from head to toe and the sandals. And so I was also getting slippage on my sandals. And I think both times that I've had this in the center of my foot, it's been hot, and my feet have, I think my feet have been slipping, and that's kind of I think where it came from.
That kind of piston thing going on.
Yeah.
Can you you fix that in those sandals, or how do you deal with that?
I don't know yet. I'm still learning, still learning about these sandals.
help me.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, the sweat from my body drips down, and that's where, you know, they were, when they're dry, I don't feel that. But with the humidity that we've had, I mean, it's been very humid. And so yeah, my clothes were soaked and but I mean, runners with shoes, they end up with squishy shoes because of the sweat that comes.
Yes.
So you don't have to go through a water crossing to get your shoes wet when you're running in the summer in Kansas.
I agree.
That's good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the things that also I know is something that you do is you forage. You're a forager, and since hearing your episode, I have been looking at plants and thinking, oh, you know, I should start taking a bag with me when I go running, seeing what I can collect.
You should. Kansas is great for morels, I hear.
Yes, the morel season was short this year. Yeah, they start somewhere around May to June. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we ended up only finding about 5 of them this year. So, but
I'm sorry.
But it's the
weather's been really funky, weird everywhere, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And there were it's hit or miss, and so we were looking some of the places where they should be growing. And we didn't find many, but I mean, my wife was on it's a morel Facebook group, Kansas Facebook group for morels.
Oh, cool.
And people were showing these, you know, great big baskets full, and we're like, yeah, because if you get into a place where they are, they're there, but you never know. So.
Oh yeah. And I'm a terrible, it's bad. When I start seeing mushrooms, I was with a friend of mine, her name's Leslie, and we were running in Gig Harbor, just in the trail there, and by God, I couldn't stop fast enough. All of a sudden, I saw this red thing on the side of the trail, and no way! It was a lobster mushroom.
Oh, wow.
And she barreled right off. She just took off, like, wait a minute, because I'd never been to the Gig Harbor, to the trail there, running it. And so she took off, her dog takes off, and I'm finding this, and I'm digging up this lobster mushroom going, it's a lobster! And I found a couple of chanterelles, and she's looking at me going, oh, God dang it, can't you just keep running? I was like, no! Because I don't know if I'm going to come back to that trail again.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to clear it. I had to get the mushrooms when I found them. So I stalled everybody. Same darn thing as you know, what, huckleberries and natural, you know, wild blueberries. I just have to pick everything.
Mm-hmm.
I had a hike this past weekend, and there were like a couple of the girls. My same friend Leslie was with me, and two other women. I had to pick everything. Oh, look, more, you know, huckleberries, red ones, blue ones. Look. Oh, my God, looks like blueberries. Oh, we got to do this. Oh, look, salmon berries, let's eat those. And they just, like, you're a wildlife guide, aren't you? I was like, no, I just know what I can eat.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know everything. Because I used to go around trails and go, ooh, look at this berry, and just look to pick it to eat it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was with my friend, and I was picking a white berry, and I'm now learned you don't pick white berries.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, ooh, can you eat this? No, it's poisonous.
Yeah.
So I've had to buy books and I've had to learn, but God, the world, this earth provides you with food that if you know what you're looking at, you can eat it.
Mm-hmm.
Even miner's lettuce. Miner's lettuce is awesome.
What lettuce?
Miner's lettuce.
I've not heard of that one.
I hadn't either, but it was all over the place. And I tasted it because I bought a book. Mm-hmm. You know, book great. And I tasted it, and I swear it was dipped in sugar.
Wow.
And so we go hunting for morels and spring boletes, which we can do here in the same season. Mm-hmm. Spring boletes grow where morels grow here, which is really exciting to me. There was bunches of miner's lettuce, and I brought a lady, a wonderful woman who's from the Philippines. She used to be my director of rehab. I said, look at this. You can pull this and eat this, because they're known to damn near eat everything, right?
Like, yeah.
Bolu. Mm-hmm. You'll eat this, right? So she ate it. She goes, oh, my God, that's edible. I said, yeah. It's being able to share with people the wonders of the world that's around you that you can actually live off of if you got to or if you want to. Mm-hmm. And this, it's fascinating to me. Just fascinating. I love sharing.
Now, I found a weed growing alongside the trail that was a very, very deep green, and it was one that I hadn't seen before. And there was like just like lush on each side of the trail. And I didn't recognize it. And I mean, it's not like I paid it a whole lot of attention, but it was like, this was different enough. It caught my attention. And so I took a picture of it with, you know, with my phone, and then used the Google search thing that, you know, does all the analysis of it. And it came up with what was called Canadian clearweed. And
I've heard of that.
And it's related to the stinging nettle, and it's edible. And there was just like gobs of it. And I went, you know, I've gotten into eating greens. I mean, like spinach, you know, and cook, take a whole bunch of spinach and cook it down. I mean, I've been trying to add those kinds of greens to my diet. And I was like, this would be just like spinach. And so I wonder what it tastes like. I picked it and put it in my mouth and chewed it, and it was a really kind of this nice peppery flavor. And I was like, wow. And I didn't really like get a harvest of it last year, but this year I ran past some of it, and like, I'm going to go back and I'm going to actually harvest some of that and try to fry it up. Cause I'd pull it off as I was running. I'd pull off, you know, two or three leaves and stick it in my mouth and chew it up and eat it just as I was running. It had a great flavor raw.
Absolutely. There's so many things out there you can eat. People should get a book based on foraging or wild edibles in any state that they're at. And if they run into trouble even, mm-hmm. they've got something they can work off of and knowledge for being out in the trails. And I think it's important. I really do.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a lot of cattails around too, and I've heard how edible all the cattails are, and it's one of those things. It's like that's something that I am going to try. I've been in the back of my mind. I want to experiment with. It's like, what?
Me too. I've heard about that. I read. I'm like, no way. And apparently you can. I think when it's like a light brown, when the cattail is light brown, not dark brown, ready to mm-hmm. do that thing.
Yeah.
And I get. Oh my God. I guess Leslie's me a lot. Well, I just was telling her about cattails too.
Yeah, and the roots as well. And so yeah, I keep thinking, hey, yeah, I needed to get that done before, you know, and then I was also taking note of where all the elderberries are when they were blooming, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna harvest some elderberries this year.
Absolutely. You can make elderberry syrup out of it.
Yeah.
You just do much with those things.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and so much of that is there's medicinal, elderberry has a lot of medicinal qualities as well. So,
absolutely. A lot of mushrooms I find. Absolutely.
So yeah. After hearing you talk about that, it's like that's kind of, I planted that seed in my mind. It's like I'm going to start looking into that, because I enjoy, you know, as I run through the woods. I mean, seeing the different fungi, and I mean, it's like my wife, I run the same trails all the time, and my wife says, "Don't you get tired of it?" I says, it's different. It's every time. Every time there's something different there. And
it is when the trees are full of leaves versus when the trees are starting to lose their leaves, and then you start seeing something different on the ground, and then when they fully lost their leaves, you see even more dappled stuff that will show even other different kind of plants that you didn't see before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I love that stuff.
Yeah, I enjoy seeing the changes of the seasons. So
that is a thing. I do like that. I didn't know that existed in Florida.
Oh, that's true.
Not as hot.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the seasons.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess the things grow there like all the time. I mean, the orange trees, do they have seasons like?
They do. You know, the orange is only mature and sweetened after its first frost.
Oh, wow. Okay. So they have to get a frost to get them.
Yes, they do. And if they don't, then from what I understand, the orange growers will pull and then create a frost for them. But sometimes there's usually a frost. You know, it has to just hit 32 degrees, and it does mm-hmm. do that every year.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It doesn't do this wonderful stuff at our end.
Yeah, and it, depending on where you are, the weather can be pretty extreme. I mean, I know Washington State is a little milder than some of the other areas, but
it is. It definitely snows here and stuff. Absolutely, yeah. I love snowboarding, so I'm always out doing that. but it'll snow for a while, but then it rains a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's good for the mushrooms.
Yeah, that's true.
Happy, like it's supposed to rain tonight and tomorrow. Well, by God, I'm going to be out in the mountains Friday morning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be looking for chanterelles. They call them rainbow chanterelles.
The rainbow, okay.
They're little tiny mini chanterelles, and they're just yummy.
Mm-hmm. I saw chanterelles for the first time about a month ago. There was a guy on the trail had this weed whacker, and I asked him, "Are you trying to do trail maintenance?" And he says, "No, I'm looking for mushrooms." And he had a handful of chanterelles, and so he.
You need a mushroom book.
They're what?
You need a mushroom book so you can find it, so you know what you're looking for. Chanterelles are awesome.
Yeah, and that's it kind of intrigued me. I was like, wow, that sounds like it could be an interesting, because the only thing I knew was morels, and that's that, everybody knew about those. And he belongs to this mushroom hunters
mushroom group,
and so he went through, he started listing off all the mushrooms that were around in the woods you could eat, and I'm like, oh my goodness, I need to figure some of this stuff out.
And if you like mushrooms, it's perfect for you to check that out. It'll just get you out further, and you'll see more trails than you ever did.
Yeah I like mushrooms.
And it provided for you out right out there in your trails. You got to go learn.
Yeah.
Go join a club. Learn about it and take off and do your own thing, just like I did.
Yeah.
You pay me to take them out.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
A guided mushroom tour?
Yes. To learn how to find them.
Uh-huh.
I'm pretty wicked at it, actually.
Well, maybe we should have you come to Kansas the next year that morels come on.
Oh, I'm so much fun discovering. I love that stuff.
Yeah.
But then I love rock hunting too. It gets me outside. Great.
Yeah.
More power to you.
So what do you have? Do you have any things scheduled as far as races that you want to do coming up next year, or you just going out run for fun?
No. All races have been canceled over here the end of 20 at least.
Right. I was thinking about next year.
2021, I would still want to do the Romania trip.
Okay.
I would want, just the very idea, Romania, mushroom capital over there.
No, I did not know that that was a mushroom capital.
Yeah, I'm really sick about it. If you go on Instagram, you can see a whole bunch of different, they call Geo Ticket, I think is what it's called. And there's a whole lot of porcini mushrooms. You can see these guys just find all these mushrooms in Romania. in Belarus. It's over on that side is all I can say.
Okay.
And so I wanted to go there anyway because there's mushrooms out there, and the race was a bonus.
Mm-hmm.
But I learned, so I'm not a good racer. I suck at it because I get competitive. I get highly anxious. I get very upset. It's not just my race, and I'm not running for me. I get wrapped up into how close to first or second or how far away from last am I.
Okay.
I am not a good racer, and I've learned that for me racing is probably not the appropriate because I get stressed out. Mm-hmm. I put myself in such hell,
mm-hmm.
and in hopes that I'm going to place. Because usually when I have run, and it's funny, road races, I've usually run my division. I've run first. I've gotten first place.
Okay.
And then I started running more, and I started dropping down in my place. I'm like, oh, I'm not doing this anymore. Forget that. I'm not going to do this anymore. So I've backed out of almost all races.
So have you been competitive like that all your life?
Yeah. I'm a twin.
Okay.
So competition for a whole lot of things was almost a natural part of life.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in my mind, I guess I'm gifting myself the permission to not feel that and to not race because I would put myself in that position.
Mm-hmm.
I'll sweep with anybody. I will run. I'll sweep the course. Pick all the stuff up for you.
Mm-hmm.
For me, that's not a timed event because you can't run past the last person.
Yeah,
no competition.
Mm-hmm.
I even swept for a half. What was it? I think I swept for a half marathon up in the mountains one time, and I ended up running with this little lady who just was trying desperately just to do her first 13.
Mm-hmm.
And it was I. pushed her a little. I ran with her, and she'd walk, and I go, I couldn't pass her. But I recognized and said, by God, you're just going to finish, and that's what you wanted to do, and this is great.
Mm-hmm.
And so I recognize sweeping is fine for me, and I don't want to spend the money like that.
Yeah, they get expensive. Yeah,
absolutely. So no, the only thing I would pay for would be the Romania race.
Okay. Well, and then to travel. So when you go to races like that, or when you went to Bhutan, were you able to dial it back and say, okay, I'm here for the experience? Are you still?
No.
If it's a race,
It was absolutely unreasonable for me to even think I could place in anything, because remember, these guys are mostly highly trained, already acclimated Bhutanese with mm-hmm. a fifth chick, one of our girls. Jules McLaughlin, she's amazing anyway. It was ludicrous for me to even think I'd ever place in anything.
No, I mean, no. What I ask is, were you able to rein yourself in and to tell yourself, you still were pushing yourself and trying to go?
Oh my God, I was dying. I was so hot. Oh, yeah. No, I couldn't rein it in.
Uh-huh.
As much as they said, oh, I'll never place, leave it alone, just run it,
uh-huh.
I couldn't just run it. I had to, okay, I passed her, okay, wait a minute, okay, oh, okay, I passed him, oh, my God, there's a yak in front of me, oh, my God, the dogs. the livestock were definitely an obstacle.
Mm-hmm.
And that suspension bridge, you had to wait. If there was too many people, the bridge was tipping. Because there were so many people on one side of it, because their police had shifted everybody over. It was a right-of-way bridge for people to go back and forth to work or to shop or whatever. It was part of their life. They were just allowing us to be on the opposite side. So it was shifted and twisted up.
Hmm.
So you're going, you're scaling up. this bridge that just kept wobbling, and you're looking down at the river going, oh my God, that's kind of high. Oh my God, it's not going to break, is it? Oh my God, how many people are on this bridge? Oh my God, I want off this bridge. Kind of.
Yeah, and you wonder, you know, they probably didn't have engineers who actually had figured out. I'd imagine they just kind of built it like, yeah, it looks like it'll hold 50 people.
Huh. Yes. Yeah. So no, I couldn't dial it back. And so I had a miserable, and, you know, I have a miserable run. Mm-hmm. Again, which I do to myself. And to relieve myself of that, again, to get I'm gifting myself the permission to just simply not do that kind of, forgive me for saying mind fuck.
Mm-hmm.
It's worth it. I like to run. Mm-hmm. I'll run. I'll do trails. I'll be with you. I'll do everything I can. But I'm not going to race for the time, because you see everybody else go, what was your time? What was your time? How far did you go? What was your place? Did you place? No. It's not. I'm not going to do that to myself.
Mm-hmm.
Want to.
Yeah. And I think there are people who out there who are like you that don't give themselves that permission to dial it back.
Yeah.
And they're competitive, but it's still, it's not able to compete with themselves, not able to say, okay, I'm going to be my best, but they're looking at other people and going like,
God. Yeah, I can't let it go.
Yeah.
I've wanted to for as many times as I've raced, and I was hitting my first place divisions. I was hitting it. I was doing great. And when I got into the 55 or whatever, mm-hmm. no 50 mover or something, there's some amazing older runners. And I went, okay. And then I started getting upset and sad because I got second place or I got third place. Like, no, forget it. You know, cried a little in my beer.
Yeah.
And it couldn't just be fun. I couldn't just let it be fun.
Mm-hmm. And that's for running especially. I mean, it needs to be fun. It needs to be.
Yeah.
And that's what I had some folks that are part of my running group that they were pushing for 100 miles, and both of them fell short, and you know, they both said, you know, I was trying to make this goal. I'd set this goal for what I wanted to do, and it drained the fun out of it for me. And yep. And so, you know, both of them are just kind of like, okay, you know, I did what I did, but let's just go and have fun. And so yeah, that's an important thing to be able to do. I mean, and we get so caught up. I mean, ultra marathon runners get so caught up in the distance and the time and the pushing yourself and of course we're Americans, you know, we want to, we want to, like, you've got to take it to the extreme. And
that's true. And I get that. That's why I will work medical lead or volunteer during those races, and then if somebody needs a sweep, I'll sweep. I'll hang with them for that. And I can get the trail race in, and I can, you know, have this amazing experience and just not have to do the timing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'll. I just don't think I will get past that. If I do, like, I'll end up doing the same thing as I've always done if I get to go to the Sky Race, if I get to go to Romania.
Mm-hmm.
I won't be able to go, it's fun, I'm just gonna do it. I want to be better. There's this thing I have to prove, God knows why. I'm 55, let me go, leave me alone. I don't know why.
Yeah. And that's so. There. It's, see, I've had to go the opposite way. I've had to do a lot of mindset work to become more, more competitive, more of that drive and competition. you know, that it was for me, I was like, from where you were at, I was like the far opposite end of the perspective. And so, yeah, I've had, you know, that's a lot of the reason why I'm doing what I'm doing now is because about 4 or 5 years ago, I had this mental transformation, and that's what led me to losing weight and starting to run. I'm one of the back of the packers, you know, that I still am doing it for myself, but the drive to succeed and the idea of pushing myself is something that that's fairly new to me.
Welcome to that world.
Yeah. But I understand what you were saying. Yeah, my wife has a very similar mindset to where you're at, and she asked me. She says, "Doesn't it bother you when people pass you?" I was like, "No, no." I just, but yeah, she would be, if she were a runner, she would be very much like you. Like if I can't come in first, why would I even try?
It's tough.
Yeah,
and it's limiting, which is why I don't do absolute races. I'll run with you, but I won't enter the race. Mm-hmm. I don't want to know my time. I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah.
Did I enjoy it? Was it beautiful? Am I grateful for being out here? Yeah. Cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. Well, thank you. I appreciate you taking the time. I'm sorry for the technical difficulties, and yeah, I don't know. This is still a fairly new podcast, and so I don't know if somebody else will find you and ask you to be on another podcast too.
I'm open and grateful for sharing anything that I have to give.
Yeah, I appreciate this conversation. I always enjoy meeting new people and talking. So, if you ever come to Kansas City. Would love to show you barbecue, or you know, if you are into barbecue and
yes, I am.
Yeah, and if I head that way, I may drop in and say hi. So
I'll take you mushrooming.
Yeah, yeah, I'd love to see the mushrooms out there with that kind of range.
Amazing. They're just beautiful and spectacular.
Yeah. Well, thank you again, Christina. Oh, I did want to say, are you taking, I mean, are you doing gait analysis? Are you still doing any of that? Are you doing, take some clients? So if somebody hears this and wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way to touch base with you if they would like to have some help?
Well, they can always contact me on Facebook. You know, okay. I don't know if you have that information there.
Yeah, I've got. I'll share that on the with the notes.
They can message me, and I can go from there. That people come to me to my place, or I'll even try working with them via video.
Okay.
Facebook Messenger people. I don't do the StreamYard.
Yeah. I'm grateful to Facebook Messenger for this. Yeah, for us to be able to have this chat.
Just even learn about little nuances or shoes or anything like that. I put up something on Instagram about shoes. You know, the comparison between a Topo and an Ultra, because I'd ordered both pairs of shoes, and I talked about it on there about, you know, how they say they're a wide based foot and they're square box, the Topo. And for them they are, but for me they weren't. And I discussed why and what is it you look for. So you can find me on Instagram at Chris C. Curdy. I don't put a lot on.
Okay.
Because you know everybody's watching you. But you can find me and just talk to me there, or Facebook Messenger. You can find me, or Facebook, however it is, just whatever you need to do.
Okay. Okay.
I don't know if there's email, but I'm almost never on it.
Yeah, yeah. Facebook Messenger seems to be pretty good. And although there are, I have run into a lot of people who don't get those messages, or they don't reply, because I've contacted people that I've thought would be good for this show and sent them something on Facebook Messenger, and it I just never hear anything back from them. So
Instagram or my, if that's really the case, and they can do me on email if they so choose. And it's human feet and animal feet. So it's heads and paws.
Peds and paws. Okay.
PEDSNPAWS at hotmail.com.
Okay. Peds N. Oh, with the letter N. See, I would have spelled out the other way. So, okay.
Heads and paws.
Heads and
paws. I've always had it. I've got a thing about feet. Don't know why.
Thanks a lot for your time. I appreciate it. I love this, and I will hopefully we'll stay in touch. And if I come up with some awesome mushroom pictures, I may message you and send you some. So, well, thank you again, Christina. I appreciate it, and hope to see you around sometime soon.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Trail Talk. Hope you enjoyed my conversation with Christina Curdy. And if I can help you, please message me at Ultramarathon Mindset through Facebook. TheUltramarathonMindset.com is my website. And if I can help you in any way, please let me know. Reach out to me. I'd appreciate that. Also, if you do not subscribe to this podcast, if you like what you hear, please consider hitting that subscription button so you will be contacted. You will know when anything new comes along. And also give us a rating and review on Apple, iTunes, or Stitcher, wherever you listen to your podcast. The ratings and reviews absolutely do help us. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.